The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
The humanity of the priest is a bridge to encountering Christ and should not be a barrier. People always say, like, well, if you weren't a priest, what would you be doing? And I'm like, it's hard for me to think of anything other than what I'm doing.
That's what we're striving to discern, is what is God's plan, his dream, his will, his desire for me, where I'm going to be most fulfilled. And it really is through living a sacramental life that is absolutely going to support that.
When you're married, you have to realize it's not just you anymore. It's you and your wife and God.
If you desire to be truly happy, then your life should not be about you.
Welcome to God Calling, our locally produced program that explores the various vocations available to Catholics in all walks of life. Now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Thank you once again for joining us. This is God Calling. I am Paul Orlowski with Father Thomas Sanders today. Father, first of all, welcome to The Rock. Welcome to God Calling. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes. You are currently the vocation director over at the Abbey here in the east side of Cleveland. And before we get there, let's start. Where were you born and where'd you go to school?
Okay. I'm from Northeast Ohio, and I was born in a small town called Amherst in Lorain County, and I'm a sixth generation Sanders. And I grew up in Sheffield Lake, Ohio, and I went away to school. I went to Otterbein in Westerville. I had plans on becoming a doctor at one time. Mm-hmm. So then I took a few more classes at Ohio State, had some great medical experience working for a Catholic hospital system there. Mm-hmm. After graduating from getting my bachelor's, I was working on my medical transcript for preparing for medical school. I felt like God had other plans for me. And so I was thinking about emergency medicine, then I was thinking about psychiatry. But I had an interest in, like, marital problems, on like problems that people were having, like in relationships. I had quite an interest in that. I remember getting different books from the library, different books on spirituality. One saint who particularly stood out was Saint Francis of Assisi. And reading about Saint Francis got me to think about religious life. And right before my grandmother, who I used to visit a lot in Amherst, she had a lot of wisdom to give me whenever I visited. If it wasn't some kind of book that she kept that was useful for me to, like, to study science or music, whatever that was. She had a stroke, and when she came home, she had a heart attack. She had a heart attack.
Okay.
She had a bypass surgery. When I went to visit her, when I came home from college, she had this book on the Franciscans, on St. Francis and the missionary work that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was very noble. And I'd even thought about, like, religious life when I was in high school. I went to public high school, and when I took music appreciation, like, Western music begins with, like, a Gregorian chant.
Sure.
Because the modern music notation we have now is based on, like, the square note notation that the monks used.
This calling, eventually, farther down the line, typically what I found in guests is that it comes from youth. Tell me about you being very, very young. Church every Sunday, that sort of thing, grace before meals. What was your home life like? I know you have a sister, I believe.
Yes, I have a sister, and Sunday Mass was part of our upbringing. My father belonged to the Knights of Columbus, so there were different events where we turned out, like in the Regalia, and we went along to those different events. Plus, he was involved in... He was like district deputy, and there would be like state conventions. So I went along to state conventions. That's where I got familiar, like, with like who a chaplain is, a bishop.
How important was that as you, because you had that knowledge maybe in the back of your head, but it was there as you started to think about consecrated life.
Consecrated life, when I began to think about that was, I know I was getting off on a tangent there with my grandmother.
No, it's fine.
But with St. Francis of Assisi, that's when I began to think more about the religious life after I thought that was very noble in high school, like with the Benedictine monks and the liturgy of the hours, how they pray through different parts of the day. I thought that was very noble, but I was set on becoming a doctor. But that's when I became more open to the consecrated life, when I read about St. Francis of Assisi and then watched a movie about him that was made in the 70s, which I thought was very moving. And It wasn't until maybe like a year later, I was watching a reality show called The Monastery, where these five guys went to stay at a Benedictine monastery in New Mexico.
Okay.
And the cameras are on them the whole time. They're going aside with microphones, and they're like sharing their experience, like what's going through their minds. And I saw more of that wisdom. That's when I went deeper into like who Saint Benedict was and that wisdom. And that's how I got in touch with, it was a coworker who shared with me his bulletin from his parish, because I moved back to Cleveland from Columbus. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at his bulletin, and I saw on the back this advertisement for Living with Benedict weekends. And these Living with Benedict weekends are for, it said, from ages 18 to 45 who are discerning their vocation. I'm thinking, this is right up my alley. I need to check this out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the rest is history.
So, but something as simple as that, I think we don't evangelize enough sometimes. Just somebody handing you that, and look at how it changed your life and the lives of students, certainly, over at the high school, where you're also the chaplain, I believe, at the high school.
That's correct.
They find jobs for you to do, don't they?
Yes. Also, so being campus minister for our young men, helping to form them, getting them involved in the faith life of the school. Also in the monastery, being vocation director, I'm also organist. So I spend a great deal of time practicing. I try to practice an hour a day on the organ. And I also have an interest in playing piano and guitar.
Okay. So obviously music, very important in
singing
liturgy, sir. Absolutely.
And one of my favorite things about being a priest is being able to sing the Mass. I even sing the Eucharistic prayer.
Wonderful. We have a very musical guy at our parish as well, so it adds a lot to the to the worship experience, at least in my view. I read someplace, and I don't know what they all are, but there's four types of monastic life, and yours is cenobic. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, cenobic, that's like an ancient term, means community. That means we're monks who live in community. You can also have monks who live in like the desert, like they live like hermits, like solitary, and also there's also cloistered monks where they don't leave the monastery. But our St. Andrew Abbey, we're active contemplative. So we live in a monastery, we call it an enclosure. So the public doesn't come in, but the monks are free to go out with that, permission.
That gets back to St. Francis, the ministry beyond the walls of the monastery, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. See, I've done a little bit of homework. Father, if you stay with us, we're going to be back on God Calling right after these messages here on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Father Thomas Sanders is joining us on God Calling this week. Thank you for staying tuned and joining us on the program, as we hope you'll do each and every week at this time. My name is Paul Orlowski, and Father, you're also the vocation director at Benedictine at the Abbey. Tell me about the young men you're running into these days. Are they interested? Do they need a little push? Or, you know, we're having fewer priests, but I'm very impressed by all the young priests that we talk to coming on the program who are just ordained, and they found something. But what are you seeing in young men today?
In young men, I'm not seeing as many young men taking an interest in visiting than older. A lot of vocation inquiries are older, like I would say like late 40s, 50s.
Wow.
And there are fewer younger men than there were like maybe 30 years ago, 30, 40 sure. years ago who were interested. But I think the more that we're present, the more that we're present in the diocese, I think more young men will—they see that this life is out there, and that's something that's worth checking out.
In drawing older fellas, I suspect you know they're coming with a lot more life experiences. I don't want to say better priests, because that's not what I mean, or better members of the community, but they've done some things and have insight, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. I notice among them too is that this is like the religious life was something they thought about when they were younger. They come with like no experience has gone to waste. So yeah. The experience they bring with them goes a long way in the monastery, in the monastic life.
I should probably do a better job of separating the fact that you're the vocation director, not for the priesthood necessarily. You have certainly chose that, but certainly for the monastic life at the Benedictine order. Tell me about the Benedictine life, the rule of St. Benedict.
Okay, the rule of St. Benedict was written in the 6th century. And this was like written from the experience of St. Benedict, because he was originally like a hermit, And through the different communities he went to throughout Italy at the time, going about the different monasteries, from his experience that he wrote a rule based on holding a community together and living a holy life. And he also brought along the rule of St. Augustine and the rule of St. Basil. And he integrated that into a rule. So he calls that a redaction, bringing different sources together. And there's also this rule of the master, which he used a great deal of. This is kind of like all these good parts from these different rules, and plus his own insights, have this rule of which we call the rule of Saint Benedict, which has been passed down to monasteries throughout Europe.
Mm-hmm. So kind of, from what I've read, at least, a homogenization of hospitality, Catholic education, parish ministry, and pastoral service. That kind of sum it up pretty well.
That's right. Pharmacies, hospitals, a lot of these, like throughout, like medieval Europe, where this stable foundation was built by the Benedictine monks, and a lot of these, like pastoral services that you mentioned, are still in place today.
Sure. This is a quote, the Rule of St. Benedict, chapter 72. I'm not going to ask you to quote it because I have it right here in front of me, but let them prefer nothing whatever to the love of Christ, and he may bring us all together to everlasting life. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Harder to accomplish maybe than just reading it out of here, but what is the day like at the monastery for you?
The day is very structured, and this is like a rhythm, a cycle that we become accustomed to, but through formation. I can expect to get up at 5 a.m. every morning, get ready for morning prayer, 10 after 6. This is like during weekdays, and usually I'm playing the organ, and followed by breakfast, and then planning my day, being involved with the campus ministry, getting together again with the monks at 11:40 for our midday prayer, followed by lunch. Then there's some recreation time in the afternoon. There's a work assignment in the afternoon, and then there's an hour of music practice in the late afternoon, getting ready for Vespers. And there's also time out for spiritual reading before Vespers and the ancient practice of reading the Bible or any spiritual work called Lectio Divina, reading a small passage at a time, like reading until a phrase strikes you and then just stopping, reading it over and over again and praying over it and thinking about how you can integrate that into your life. Mm-hmm. Lectio Divina, that's called. Then after Vespers, then praying as a community, we eat as a community dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Then we call the Divine Office, the different prayers of the day that we pray together as a community. We start at 7:05 praying for the next day, called the Office of Readings or Vigils. That involves two readings. That prayer is about 20 minutes, and then I set the music to play for the next day, and then in the evening is a time for prayer, recreation. On Wednesdays, the monks have recreation time.
Okay. You don't say 7 o'clock, it's 7:05. It's very structured.
7:05, yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. If you'll stay with us, we're going to be right back on God Calling after this. Our guest today on God Calling is Father Thomas Sanders. He is the vocation director for the Benedictine Abbey here in Cleveland. And stay with us. We hope you will each and every week join us at this time on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Thanks once again for staying with us on God Calling. I am Paul Orlowski with Father Thomas Sanders. And Father, you're in the Benedictine Order. When did it strike you that you wanted to go farther and become an ordained Catholic priest?
When I was a novice, so that's one of the first steps in becoming a monk.
Mm-hmm.
The first step is being a postulant. It's like being on a retreat for 6 months. So 6 months, I was a postulant, then a novice. You're invested as a novice, you receive a religious name and the cassock, and so part of the habit. And during that year-long period, I was praying over not only answering the call to become a monk, but also the call to become a priest. So that was something I prayed over as well. And so toward the end of my novitiate, my formation director asked if the community would like you to study for the priesthood, would you be open to it? And I said yes.
Yeah. So they saw something
mm-hmm.
in you, certainly. Now, you serve clearly at the direction of the abbot. The abbot is the boss, and not a democracy necessarily, right?
But like the Holy Father, he's like the Holy Father for the community. Instead of living under, like, as a diocesan priest, you live under, like, your superior is the diocesan bishop.
Mm-hmm.
Our superior is the abbot. And the abbot is someone who's elected kind of like the Pope, kind of like how the Pope is elected, except we don't send up white smoke when we elect
No smoke, huh? And, of course, Bishop Grease has been our guest before, too, but the previous abbot, just, you know, wonderful guy. He reflects a joy in the gospel, at least in my view, which is nice to see. But now you're at the Borromeo and John Carroll getting the necessary coursework and stuff. And is that a kind of a contrast for you compared to life in the Abbey?
Yes, it was. But I had a classmate. There was Father Lewis, who was ahead of me in formation. He was also taking classes. He was working on a degree. He was working on a degree, so I needed to take hours of philosophy, like 30 hours of philosophy, 12 hours of religious studies. Mm-hmm. I needed those courses. Since I already had a science degree, I needed to get those courses. So a lot of our courses overlap. So we commuted during the day. So we would sometimes, we'd have to like drop each other off at like maybe what, John Carroll or Borromeo.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, I think we met up at Borromeo and then we commuted over to John Carroll for our classes there. But most of the time, we were able to commute both the classes, share books. So that was very communal, sharing.
Being that the community sent you there, is there extra pressure to study harder, to work harder, and to know you've got to do this? Maybe compared to somebody off the street, because you know your brothers have really given you quite a vote of confidence.
Another thing too is this: like our tuition was covered. Our tuition was paid for, and I'm very grateful for that.
Sure.
And so I want to do the best, like with my grades, and also, you know, academically also do very well, because when asked questions, like by parishioners or family members, friends, like I want to know my stuff. So I want to do the highest quality work that I can produce.
Yeah, and a lot of times when people are coming to you, they're in crisis, so they want some answers, and I'll get back to you doesn't work.
Right.
You've got to be ready for them, I think. By the way, what's the most rewarding part of your calling?
Most rewarding is at the end of the day, to look back and see that, like, this isn't something that I just, like, all the work, like what I did in the monastery, like with music, with prayer, or in the school, that this isn't something I just did for myself, for like my own satisfaction. But I know this is what I'm contributing to the good, to goods, like fruitfulness that'll happen even beyond my years.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're the 17th, or I'm not sure if there have been more since, but you're the 17th member of the Abbey to become an ordained priest.
Yes, and second to be ordained by Bishop Roger.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yes. I did read that, too. I'm going to get back to the high school, because I'm so interested in youth today and these kids and how maybe they're not as exposed to religion as at home as we once were, and I'm way older than you, but are they open to religion in general? I mean, they're going to, in your case, they're going to Benedictine, so they've had some training,
yes,
for sure.
There's a lot of curiosity I've seen among the young men, like in the classroom, when I've substitute taught, or like study halls, they have a lot of questions. They're very curious. They're very curious about the religious life. Even the students who aren't Catholic, they're very intrigued about, they always ask questions like what made you want to be a monk?
Mm-hmm.
Those questions, they're very interested in the calling. So I always share with them, always glad to share, answer their questions.
Well, it takes discernment. It wasn't like a, you know, St. Paul moment where you're knocked off the horse. You were going other ways, which goes hand in glove with what you're doing, because I think you're also the science teacher, aren't you?
Yes,
I've also taught
science. And
when you're in the hospitals, Catholic hospital in Columbus, and that's kind of when you started some of this formation. How, in seeing people in distress, how important was that in making you maybe want to help people or be a part of healing, both physically and mentally?
Yes, healing. This was So I started as a hospice volunteer and like seeing
tough work.
Yeah, tough work, like with families, the grief, dealing with grief, and also with my grandmother. When my grandmother had a stroke, after she shared the wisdom, when she came home from having a heart attack, recovered from that, shared this book with me about St. Francis of Assisi, and then having a stroke where she lost her short-term memory.
Mm-hmm. Tough.
Yeah, that was very tough. And I'm sorry. We were talking about
just the young people and your call and how rewarding and all you had quite a journey for a young man.
Right. And healing. We're talking about healing. Yes. Yeah. When I was taking a science course as an undergrad, I was very interested in this branch of healing called it breaks down to like our thoughts control our health.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're dealing with a lot of guilt and like troubling thoughts, I found a lot of healing when I went to confession right before I graduated from college. And I thought, this is very useful. Like, I can do a lot of good with the sacraments compared to like writing a script. Like a doctor's can write a script for someone who's having a lot of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
But little do they know if they would seek more of a spiritual life and having the sacraments that with God in their life could do a lot of good. So as a priest, discerning becoming a priest, I found that I could do a lot of good with the sacraments than I could in medicine in some situations. Mm-hmm.
The mind, the conscience, powerful, powerful stuff. And sometimes, I firmly believe it trumps medicine sometimes. Just that positive energy and thinking positively, mm-hmm. and you're a witness to it. And so, if somebody's interested, how can they contact you?
216-721-5300, extension 225, or email Thomas, Thomas, at standrewabbey.org.
Okay.
Through email.
Why don't you give me the phone number one more time?
And 216-721-5300, extension 225, and also prayer.
Yeah. Probably the number one right there. Just pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
Father, thanks for joining us. Father Thomas Sanders, the vocation director for the Benedictines out at St. Andrew's Abbey. We do appreciate your coming, and we appreciate everyone listening right here on God Calling. My name is Paul Orlowski. We're here each and every week at this very same time, and we hope to see you then. Take care.
Thank you for listening to God Calling. If you missed part of today's show, or you just want to hear it again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab. And remember, wherever you are in life, God is calling you.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.